So you just kind of study and you find something that looks promising, so then you take a little time to investigate it. That's the way it goes. Now, when I finished, I was at Columbus, Ohio this last year, and we talked about Leviticus, because in our Wednesday night study, which I always tell brethren, I learn more new things on our Wednesday night study than anywhere else. And we have a group of brethren that come together that, you can talk and really dissect things. We have about 10 brethren there. And we learned a lot about Leviticus. We started Tabernacle Shadows, and we went through Leviticus, the first 7 chapters, and I learned so much. And so that's why I gave it when I was in Columbus. And on the way home, we had a long drive back to San Diego, Texas, and then San Diego. So I said, "Well, Ruth, what's after Leviticus? That would be Numbers." I said, "Well, read it to me." So as we're driving, she read it, and just things fell into place. And until you get to the 15th chapter, which I didn't have a clue. I turned to Ruth and said, "I don't know what this is about." She says, "Well, you're kidding. It's transparent." I said, "Really? Well, then explain it to me." And so she did. And now I realize she's right. It's transparent. Once you know. Anyway, so that's the way I study. I just study when things look promising, or maybe studying for a talk or something and you have to buckle down. But then I said, "Well, there is one time of day when I do, if I have enough mental capacity left at the end of the day, and I can stay awake a little bit in bed, and I'll do some reading. Or sometimes I'll just take a pad of paper and my calculator and do a little thinking." That's how I found out that 458 was in the middle of 7,000 years. Instead of just end of the day, lights, I can still stay awake for a little bit, and started trying to test a few possibilities. I could hardly believe what I saw. That was just remarkable. And so that's why, these parallels, time parallels I showed you last night. Now, I got to go over them again because there's some other things that are more striking to me, but I couldn't remember how to segregate the periods. The 539 comes up in the upper chart. Every number in the upper chart comes down in the lower chart, but I won't do that tonight. But there's another thing. Now, sometimes you work with numbers a little bit. You find something. It looks promising, but you just step back. You say, is this right, or is this just something I'm kind of foreseeing or something? But, there's, in the flood, that was a remarkable new beginning. The flood was a brand new start for the human race. And it just turns out that from the flood, there are periods of time to all of the major prophetic events at the end of the age that somehow turn out to be additions of meaningful numbers. Now, maybe I'm forcing it, but this is a non-formal situation, not presenting it open to, I don't think I've ever given this in a discourse. I don't envision doing it in the near future. But, I'm among friends where they can point out things that maybe they see are not quite right and help me out here. But this is what I'm finding. Here's the flood. Flood is 2303 B.C., and if I was to ask you to take that to the kingdom, to the millennial age, well, that would be way over here at, I'll just put it down here, 2043, right? I mean, that's what I think. I'll show you a few other things that I think really augment that too today. But not yet. From 2303 to 2043, that would turn out to be the sum of 1845 and 2500. Now, well, that's interesting to me. Does it really work? I mean, I have to double check. I'm doing this semi from memory here. 2303 plus 2043 minus, I didn't do that right. 2303 plus 2043 minus 1 is 4345. Subtract 1845, and you're left with 2500. Okay, so that's interesting to me. I say, well, maybe it's just a unique combination. If you want to take 2043, you take it instead to 1874, right? That should produce something of interest if this is meaningful and not just random. Well, 2303 and 1874 is the sum of, I'm doing this from memory, so we'll see if I'm remembering right, 1656. What's 1656? Where'd that come from?
Time till the flood.
Adam to the flood, right? And we're starting the flood, so it's it's the other side of the flood. Plus 2520, Gentile times. Now, you might say, well, why should that be? Well, that's another question. First, I just observe that it is. and then try to figure out some rhyme or reason to this, if there's rhyme or reason to it. Let me just double check. 1656 plus 2520 is 4176 minus 16 minus 1874 plus 1, 2303. Yeah, it works. So then I think, well, if that's true, then what about some of these other dates? Well, let's go way back to the to Jesus at his crucifixion. That would be 33 A.D. It's got to be meaningful if anything is. That's from the flood to that date is the sum of 1,000, like the 1,000-year millennial reign of Christ, plus 1335. Well, it's not 1337, it's not 1314, it's a meaningful number, 1335. But then you start thinking, well, could you do this with any number? Just split it up and find enough? I don't know. I don't think so, because I've tried. what I mean is, I've tried to see, is this unique? You know, can I just take a random number and find it the product of two engaging numbers? And I'm not able to do that. So I think that this is meaningful. Well, let's see. Try it for yourself, you know. Is 1948. Okay, I think that's a meaningful number, a meaningful year. And from the flood to 1948 is these. Well, now I'm going to give you three numbers, and you're going to say, well, that's no fair. but this is what it is. It's the years up until the opening of the flood. The 1656 is really to the end of the flood. That's the way Volume 2 has it, and he's right. So this is 1655, all the years up until the flood, plus from the 1948 till the kingdom, that's 95, plus 2,500. And you say, well, wait a minute, 2,500 is not a biblical number. I've got it here and I've got it here. Well, yeah, it is, though, when you go 1,000, 2,500, 2,500. You remember the other day we had Jeremiah there for 40 years, and the corresponding one over here was 1874 to 1914? So I think that this is meaningful at 2,500. So it just is. So from 1948 to the kingdom is that. From Adam to the flood, the beginning of the flood is that. And then 2,500 years in between. What else we got? Well, 1914. Okay, you're not going to like this one.
Can you explain the significance of the 95?
In 95 years. Oh, yeah, I'll stop and explain that. I'd rather explain that than the next one I'm going to go into. 95 years is the distance between 1948 and the kingdom. Okay, 95, it'd take 1948, add 100 years, you got 2048, right? Come back 5 years, 2043. So that 95 actually comes, now did you say ask that because you knew I'd like this question?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
In a roundabout way, you find that in the flood picture also, with the from the 10-1, the 10th month, the first day, mm-hmm. to the first month, the first day, you end up with 3 months. But since you're going to the next year, you would want to add another 5.
I agree with all of that.
What's that?
I agree with all of that. Yeah, that's very true. Did you all understand what he said? Did you follow what he's talking about? Okay. Well, if here's the flood narrative. You got the 5 months, right? And the first part of this is the rain for how long?
40 days.
Now, what does it actually say in the Bible? 40 days and 40 nights. You know, I've come to the opinion that when they say 40 days, 40 nights, what does it really mean that he woke up in the morning and it started raining? And then it ended raining at the end of the night on the 40th day. I don't think so. I think that's what he meant. I think what it means, day and night. I never worked harder in my life. I worked day and night. What it means is I work continuously. And I think what he means is it rained 40 days continuously. I think that's the point. And I think the same thing applies to Jesus. Jonah was in the belly of the whale, of the fish, for 3 days and three nights. I don't think it necessarily means 72 hours. I think it means he was in there 3 days continuously without cessation, day and night. I think that's the point. And that's why Jesus is in the tomb 3 days continuously. And you know, the only time that the New Testament says Jesus was in the tomb for 3 days and three nights, the only time is when he's comparing it to Jonah. And it's Jonah who said that he was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. It's a Hebrew idiom. It means continuously. So that's my, I'm not a linguist, you know, but that's my opinion. Estelle? Yeah.
It was something about every time that it says day and night, it's like a hint, like, this isn't representing a day for a year.
I heard that comment. I was sensitive to that comment because I said to myself, I'm not sure. Because I actually think these 40 days and 40 nights actually do represent 40 years. And so that rain for 40 days and 40 nights, well, we know from what Peter said, you can put a date on the beginning of the ark experience because you get into the ark, you're saved. That has to be 33. We can't get into the ark before then. And 40 years later is 73, the end of Masada, the fall, the end of the Jewish, you know. And I talked about this before. So I actually, I internally winced a little bit when I heard that, but I just let it ride, you know. So I thought, well, you know, I'm glad she's thinking. But I happen to have known this. And then she listened, she heard this later on, and so she put that together.
David?
Yes.
Just some internal evidence on that being an idiom is found in Esther chapter 4.
Yeah.
And verse 16, she says, "Go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens also will fast in the same way, and thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." Chapter 5, verse 1. Now it came about on the third day. So it hasn't been three full nights and three full days.
That's right.
That Esther put on her royal robe.
Yeah, there you go. And of Jesus, it was said he was raised on the third day. You know, so it's very clear. So that's good. You know, every once in a while I hear some way of rationalizing 72 hours. I think, well, okay, good effort, but I don't think we need to. I don't think that's the point. Yeah. So then when they get out of the, when they come to the stopping point, that's in the seventh, it's exactly 5 months later, 217 to 717. And they look out the window, everything looks the same, but they've come to a stopping point. So they know it's like we're at the end of the age at some point, but it looks the same outside. And I think that's the prophetic marker. That would be 1874. And so we try that out and see if it's going to be fruitful. And, you know, you've already been through this. I just took you through that the other day, and some of your daughters helped me figure this out. So you go another 74 days, and that would take you on a day-for-year basis, just like this 40. That would take you to 1948. And then David said, if you calculate according to their measures, you have 3 full months before the next new year. That's 10-1 to basically 13-1. That's 3 full months. 10-1 and... that would be 90 days, 3 full months of 30 days apiece. But, David, you said, you said add 5. And why do you add 5?
Because Robin said so.
That's good enough for me. Anything he says, I pretty much take. All right. Add 5 days. Because in the old calendar, what we know is the Egyptian calendar, you had 12 months of 30 days apiece. And then at the end, when it's all done, you have 5 days before the new year comes. And those are 5 extra days bring to 365. Now, Sherelle mentioned the possibility, which my Aunt Bonnie also was, you know, favorable to, that before the flood, there were only 360 days. But, you know, there's no evidence for that, really. It's kind of a possibility, you know, possibility. But actually, there was somebody that lived before the flood that I think tells us indirectly that it was a 365-day year. Who lived about that many years? Enoch. Enoch did, yeah. He walked with God and he was not, for God took him. And 365? Well, that reminds you of the solar period, doesn't it? And we know that the church is going to shine as the sun in the kingdom of the Father, like the church is the sun. I think Enoch is a picture of the church. And therefore, I think that 365 is telling us that in his lifetime, in those days, also the year was 365. So I think it was always the same. So I think that's what Noah was doing. So he had 5 days before the new year. Now, I was giving this in a study in San Diego, a weeknight study again. That's where I learn everything. And
Now, I say that, you know, I learn more there than I do on Sundays, because Sundays we have a different group and it's not always as flexible, let's put it that way. So I was giving a weeknight study on this and on the flood, and I was pointing out that this takes you to year 601, day 1, month 1. And that's exactly the beginning of the 7th century of Noah's life. So that's true. That is a little indication that we're at the beginning of the 7th period for mankind, 7th millennium. So that tells me that the millennium didn't start here, didn't start here. It starts after this. It started here. It starts when the kingdom starts. That's all I was going for. That was Brother Keith Kleppen in our class and Brother Robin Rice, who both pointed out as I was leading the study, well, you already told us about the Egyptian calendar. Add 5 more days, what do you get? I was pleasantly stunned. So I now think that that's probably legitimate, and that that actually does take you to 2043. Now, I gave something like this once at the General Convention, but I didn't put that number there. I just put a dotted line that says that would take you to the kingdom, and I let it go with that. Anybody that wanted to know and wasn't offended by that could figure out what
I
was.
Down 95.
Okay. All right. Now, David happens to know there's more to this 95 than just what meets the eye here. Because let me ask you this. When Babylon came against Israel and relieved them of their national identity, national independence, I should say, how many years did Babylon rule? How many years was Babylon appointed?
By?
70. Okay, that's 70. And let's see. So this is the 70 years. And how many years is it between Israel's restoration and their nationhood? When did they start to be restored? Estelle, do you know a date when Israel started to go back to the land? Sometimes you hear brethren talk about it, you know. Say again? Petah Tikva. What year was that? 1878. And when did they're a nation again? 1948. And that turns out that's exactly 70 years. So I think the time that Babylon had authority and they lost their independence matches the time when they regained their independence. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think that tells you 1948 is a year of intention. It's not just happened to be that year. Bill?
I think I've asked you this question before, and maybe you haven't. You know, you have a different idea. But you know, it talks about this generation shall not pass.
Mm-hmm.
Would that apply to what you just put there? I mean, that's how I've kind of looked at that. You know, scripture. How do you look at that?
I don't, because. Because I don't think 1948 was the time. I think that this generation ought to pass till all these things be fulfilled. I think it really has to be the entire dissolution of the old order, because that's what he said in just the verses just before that. He says, the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give its light, the stars of heaven shall fall. That, you go back to Isaiah, that's language used to show the total dissolution of the political social power of the time.
Okay.
And I think that's basically seventh plague Armageddon. So that's future. So one generation doesn't do it to 2043 or even to 2012.
Right. So when do you start that then, or when would that start taking place, or what's the concept?
Literally, it fits in the context of what he had in mind to the people that heard his words. That generation would not pass till all these things be fulfilled. They had 40 years to 36 years more to go before 70 AD approximately. So it fits very nicely there. Usually, in my opinion, the immediate meaning of a text fits better than the long-range, more important meaning. It's sometimes not as precise. I'll give you an example. You remember back in Isaiah, I mentioned this example earlier today, the child shall be born before he is old enough to say, my father and my mother, to know the difference between good and evil, choose the butter and the honey and all that. The land that you abhor will be devoid of both their kings. Now that child is a picture of Jesus, because it's a virgin that shall conceive and bear this child. And a young lady who was unmarried did, you know, have a child. And that, so she had been, you know, she had it in a natural way. But Jesus was, you know, miraculous. But what are the two kings that were defunct by the time this child was 2 years old? Well, that was the king of Syria and the king of the 10-tribe kingdom. But when you come over to Jesus, who are the two kings? I can think of one, Herod. Can't think of another. So, sometimes the more important fulfillment is not as precise. It's more It's more important. It's the real intent, but it's not as precise. So I think in this case that generation might not be as precise. So what do I do with it? What I do is say, okay, he's absorbed. Yeah, go ahead.
On the other hand, you know what the new date is now that they base Social Security on?
What?
95.
95 years of age?
95 years.
Was that right? Expecting so, life?
1948 to 1943.
There you have a generation then.
Generation.
Okay, there you go. Tell them that. Maybe you'd be happy.
There's a mic there. Have you heard
of Harry, brother? The new date that they base Social Security on is 95 years of age. It used to be, I think, 75 or something like that. But now it's 95. I just heard that this week.
I think we're losing part of our audience. God bless you. That's it. I understand. I understand. I still like your question. I'll still leave you with that question.
Okay,
thank you. All right. You know all the answers I told you yesterday. Estelle, so nice to see you. Thank you for coming. Lord bless you. Estelle, in my image, you know, I have some certain memories. I remember people. The thing I really capture about you is that I was at your home, and I don't know, were you just coming home or Lizette coming home? You are both much younger. And you just gave her such a big hug and a smile at it. I thought, oh, that's the way sisters should be. That's my image of Estelle. So thank you. Okay, so this 95. Yeah, go ahead.
I just have a question on the...
I forgot the...
Where he's going at 95.
Yeah, I forgot the generation. I'm going to go back to that. Go ahead.
Okay. Take my question later then. My question was actually on the thing you talked about before this.
Okay. That I kind of think that maybe what he's talking about is, you know, in Psalm 22, he'll be cut off from the land of the living. Who shall declare his generation? A seed shall be born, and it shall be accounted to him for a generation. That seed is the church. And I think maybe that's accounted to the Lord for his generation. The church will not pass until these things are fulfilled. When is the church taken? At the midnight hour when the seventh plague falls, the last plague, the tenth plague in Egypt. So I think that's taking you to, maybe that's the point of that generation in a metaphorical sense. That's the best I can do with it. I can see he's not really excited with that.
It is what it is. Keep searching.
Go ahead.
I just had a question on the flood picture.
Yeah.
You start with the beginning of the flood.
Yeah.
Is there any significance to the 7 years or the 7 days before the flood when they actually entered the ark, which would correspond with 26 AD?
Well, that's possible. That's possible. There are three. The seven comes up continuously in the flood picture. He waited 40 days and sent out the raven and the dove. And then he waited another 7 days, sent the dove again, and then another 7 days and the dove again. I think that seven ties into the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant. When Abraham made a covenant back with Abimelech, he sent seven ewe lambs out there to picture the binding oath. Covenant really means, Sheba, yeah. It means to seven yourself, fully commit yourself. And so I think the Abrahamic covenant is represented by the number seven. That's why the gospel age is in seven parts. The millennial age can be distinguished in seven parts. The Jewish age in seven parts. So I think those sevens always say, here's one of the ages working toward the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant. Now, can you take 7 years directly? Maybe. I have some opinions that say maybe that's possible, but I don't. I'm just going to leave it right there. But this 95, I said this last night. Were you all, Bill, did you hear this?
About last night?
Yeah. You heard this. Okay, David did. Did you hear this? Okay, so I shouldn't repeat all this, but I'll just tell you very briefly, just kind of shortcutting this. If you go at 19, the date in history when the 70 years was from 610 to 540. And if you go from 540 BC forward 95 years, what date would you get? Well, take it 100 years, what date would you get?
445.
That's right, 445. 445. What happened in 445? Anything of interest? 95.
Yeah.
You're right. Something did, or we wouldn't be talking about
it. That's right.
Nehemiah finished the walls of Jerusalem. That's right. Now, what did that represent? That represents the completion of the church. Spiritual Jerusalem. Remember in Revelation, the walls of the city measure 144 cubits. Now, 144 is talking about the church. So the church is finished here. Well, that's 95 years later. So 95 years after 1948 would take you to the completion of the church.
What was 610 again?
610 was the beginning of the 70 years. 540 BC is the end of the 70 years. But you can do that with a couple of different date points here. If you were to take Ezekiel's vision of the temple, 574, and you go 2,520 years later, you get to 1948. Oh, I should put that down here, 1948. And if you were to go 95 years in the future, let's see. I say 2520 years. Really, you have to go 2520. Oh, this is complex. 574 is really the date of their last jubilee, which ran from 574 to 573. 2520 years takes you from 1947 to 1948, during which they received their independence. 95 years later from that takes you, well, that takes you to 2043, but 574 minus 95.
Is it 2,500 or 2,520?
2,520 times the Gentiles. Oh, yeah. That takes you to 479 B.C. Oh, I should put it over here. Mm-hmm. 95 years later, takes you to 479 B.C. What happened in 479? Well, nobody knows what that date is. But it turns out, when we were studying the book of Esther, we found out that that was the year when Esther was brought into the presence of the king. Esther is a picture of the church. When is the church brought into the presence of the king? 95 years after, that would be 2043. And there's another 95 years that takes you to 458 B.C. Another one that takes you to 515 B.C. 58 is the middle of God's plan right here, which kind of a synchronism to this point, 2,500 years later. 515 is the finishing of the temple. That was Ezra 6:15 we read today. 515 B.C. And that's a picture of the completion of the church. That's 95 years after, what is it? After 610, if you started over here. That'd be 95 years. I'm not explaining this as crisply as I should be explaining it. But here's the point. Here's the point. There are four different periods of 95 years, all associated with this historical period of time. All four of them take you to a date that has some meaning toward the completion of the church. The finishing of the temple, the finishing of the walls of the city, Esther being brought into the presence of the king, the midpoint, you know, that this chart that parallels to 2043.
So Ezra's commission, 458.
It is. That's right. Ezra's commission is right in the middle of the divine plan. That's beginning of 70 weeks. So all of this in the flood has got four other testimonies that suggest 95 years after 1948 would be the completion of the church. Now, I know when it's kind of messy here. It's kind of involved to explain it. But I think it's really intriguing. I think it really is quite notable. Well,
the event, yeah. I could do the event to get the 95 earlier. I just don't know what it is.
I think this one is 610. That leads here. Is that right? 610 would be 510 plus 5. Yeah, that's true. 458. Let's see. That was, I think that was 553. That's the vision of Daniel at 553. Third year of Belshazzar. I think that was it. Does that work? 550, that'd be 453, back up 5458. Yeah, that was it. So there's four date points given in the scripture. And each one of those projects forward to something that shows the completion of the church 95 years later. Yes?
I'm just trying to figure it out now because they kind of laid it all down there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 442, can you do it one more time? The 445, what happened in each of those places?
Okay.
That was Nehemiah, right?
Yeah, this is scrambled. But
540. Now, if you can't see the real, you gotta understand the real thing, looking at the video won't help. But 540 BC is the end of the 70 years. That takes you to 445. 610 is the beginning of the 70 years. That would take you to 515. 553 is Daniel's vision in chapter 8 about the temple. And it happens to take you to 458, which is,
the third year of Belshazzar?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. And 1948 is Ezekiel's vision of the temple. That's 574 BC, and you find that in Ezekiel 40, verse 1. Now, here's something super, super simple, by the way. In Ezekiel 46, verse 1. Somebody read that for me. Ezekiel 46, verse 1. This is just super simple. So simple that...
Thus says the Lord, the gate of the inner court facing east shall be shut the 6 working days. But it shall be open on the 7th day and open on the day of the new moon.
Now the new moon is when the minute you can't see it. So it's going to start waxing and getting brighter and brighter. I think this shows the time when Israel's favor begins to wax and, you know, grow. And that's when the kingdom comes. But that's a weak picture because I can't prove when that should begin. You know, maybe 1948, 78, 2043, when it should be. But the gates are closed for 6 days and they're open the 7th day. Now I got to ask the question. Today, are the gates to admit the world to the presence of God closed or open? That's just obvious. They're closed. So which day are we on? One of the 6, not the 7th. I mean, that's just transparent right on the surface. But it's so transparent that I might not use it. In fact, I was at a convention where I just spoke about this, but I didn't want to press the point. So I just said, well, this is a general picture of 6,000 years plus 1,000 years, you know, of the kingdom. Just dropped it at that. But, you know, you think about it, it's right there. The gates are closed today, so we're still on the 6 days. It's almost as simple as that.
A lot of brothers don't think the conclusions through. They need to be told.
Yeah, I know. And then you would tell them you're in trouble. So, you know, you don't want to, people, I don't want to say, I don't want to be in trouble. That's not really my point.
You're in trouble. No, it is like that.
Well, what I mean is, brethren, they have conclusions that are sacred. They're sacred to them. And you don't want to disrupt those and be callous about it. You know, that's just not the way you do. Jesus wasn't that way. He was sensitive and thoughtful. But you can't just not suggest what seems to be a cogent train of thought. You just try to be judicious about it. Now, sometimes I know that I haven't always been judicious about it. But most of the time I try to be. That's all I can say.
I mean this in the nicest, kindest possible way, but I'm okay with you being in trouble. It's
all right. All right, thanks. I got a lot of good company. Let's put it that way.
He's okay with you. Okay.
Sure.
I was really worried about you not being okay.
Another question that had come up, not my question, but I don't have an answer for it. And, of course, you don't have any problem with it because you don't have us in the seventh day. And that in the Sabbath year, and also in the things too noisy, also in the Jubilee year, they were not allowed to do any harvesting. It was one of the rules of Sabbath and of the Jubilee.
Yeah.
In fact, the year before the that 49th year, they were told that they would have 2 years with no sowing or harvesting, and they would have food for 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's something that's bothered me with the other view.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do you have... If we're in the harvest, then how can we also be in the Sabbath day when that was forbidden?
Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure quite how to answer that. Of course, because I think the seventh millennium is future, I'm not in jeopardy on that question from that point of view. However, if you ask me, are we on the seventh day, I would say, yes, we are, because the seventh stage of the church is the seventh day. So I don't know if we can avoid the problem. I would have to say, therefore, well, these are two separate ways, two separate pictures, two separate ways of looking at the issue. But I would have to, of course, that's the Sabbath year, and I'm talking about a Sabbath day, you know, we're on the seventh day of the church.
Sabbath year, they weren't allowed to harvest either, were they?
Well, what? Well, that was your question about the Sabbath year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, what I'm talking about really is the seventh day, not the seventh year picture. So maybe I'm safe here. I don't know. I got
to
think through more.
On the Sabbath day? I thought they weren't supposed to work on the Sabbath day.
Well, you could do one thing on the Sabbath day that was work. You could take your donkey out of a ditch, you know, or your neighbor's donkey. The point is, you could work if it's an act of mercy and kindness and good and support. And that's why Jesus said, and therefore, I work and my Father works. Well, he's on a Sabbath day. He's been 7,000 years, a Sabbath day. But he's working to do a work of mercy to lift the human race out of the ditch and provide for the new creation. So I think anything we're doing with respect to the new creation is okay. You know, that may be labor, but it's charitable labor. So I think that would be okay. What else I was going to say? Oh.
Brother David?
Yeah.
So
I'm going to raise this to Hodgepodge.
I want to read Luke 5:33-39.
Okay.
They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking.
Uh-huh.
Jesus answered, can you make the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them. In those days they will fast. And he told them this parable, no one tears a patch from a new garment and sews it on an old one. If he does, he will have torn the new garment and the patch from the new and will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins and the wine will run out and the wineskins will be ruined. So new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one after drinking old wine wants the new, for he says the old is better. So is this new wine what you're teaching? And how would you handle, you know, how are you planning to handle this in the future? I know your ministry overseas is quite different than here. So what do you see in the future for this?
You're talking about like with 2043
yeah.
in particular? Well, you know, I think some of the things you mentioned are just principles that are just there, and they're just principles of human life and circumstance. You're used to an old way of thinking. You say the old is better. Simple as that. And so you're just comfortable with it. Let's put it this way. Early on in my thinking in this point, I marveled at the fact that everybody that seems to be involved in the truth movement seems to have some awareness of the fact that I had this date of 2043. I remember going to the Moldova for the first time in my entire life. You happened to be there on that occasion. Yeah, because she was there more than, you know, before I was there. So I was there for the first time in my entire life. I've been to Romania before, but never to Moldova. Brother Hosu took me into Moldova to visit some classes. Very charitable of him. Took a lot of time and effort to do that. So the very first meeting we had, on the very first night, when I'm in Moldova, they had a question meeting. And I remember the very first question of the very first opportunity is Brother Gronick?
Yes.
Okay. And he says, Brother Rice, everyone in Moldova knows you have the different date, you know, 2043. I thought, well, how about that? You know, I didn't even have to come here. Because I didn't talk on that, you know.
You
I didn't.
That
No, but first question. So I thought, well, how do they know? Well, I'll tell you how they know. It's because they were warned against it already. You can't warn against it unless you inform people. Everybody seems to know. People that are partial to it, people that are ambivalent, people that are against it, they all know. And I think, I've told Ruth, I said, I can't imagine, if this is right, 2043, I can't imagine all of the brethren worldwide being apprised of this fact in such a short period of time. I didn't go out and visit and tell all these people, but they all know. So I think in one respect, Paul, really, that task is done. It's not our task to convince everybody exactly what's going to happen, but it is seems to be required to, if I really am persuaded, which I am, to at least inform people of this potential, so that they can have it in the back of their mind, see how things develop as we get closer. Now, some people say, oh, it's so far away, you know, you'll be dead before it comes and you'll never have to suffer the consequence. Well, I'm not so sure. I feel pretty healthy. I might just make it. As a matter of fact, I mean, honestly, I'm planning to live for a while. You know, now, my sister hears that and says, you, the malaria-ridden person, you know. I don't know. We'll see. But I plan to be active as long as I can. And I think by 2029 we'll see if something on the horizon here. But it just seems so clear. Everything seems to be in one direction for me. And the brethren know it. So now what's the bad? Now should I just go to rest on this? Because everybody's aware. You know, 8 years went by before I, from the time I gave it to a regular multi-day convention. That was the general convention in, well, that had to be, let's see, I gave it again in 2011. So that would be 8 years, 2003 it must have been. I gave it the general convention. And I let it rest for 8 years. I didn't speak at a major convention on this subject again. Now, I did gave a few hints here and there, a few things, you know, but I never spoke on it. And I began to think, you know, is this right? You know, I gotta say it again. You know, sometimes a lot of years gone by. So in 2011, I think it was at the Labor Day convention in New York, I had two talks assigned. I gave a two-part talk on this. And I explained, it's been 8 years. I said, you know, when somebody has a different opinion, you think you hear it, and you think he talks about it all the time. You know, but I didn't. It says, it's been 8 years since I've talked about this at a regular convention. And I, now that I've given that two parts, you know, I've given it, it's out there again. I think, you know, I don't really have to push this down people's throat. But if it's going to have any value, it'll have value perhaps to stimulate people to be encouraged toward this. And guess what's happening? Tens of thousands of people are latching onto this with great fervor. So much so I can hardly keep them supplied with literature. I mean, literally, I'm coming here. I've got, in the last week or so before I came, I've got requests from probably somewhere on the order of 2,000 people that say, we have finished the four-page brochure twice over, as you say, and we're starting the third time. Please send us the next piece. And, you know, I got to do that when I get home, send some more money, get some more printed, send them out. So these are whole churches going over to this. And so it is having an impact. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying all these are members of the new creation. Some of them are. I get constant requests for baptisms over there. And that's because I tell them what we're really after is those that want the surpassing privilege of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So the kingdom is wonderful, but we're looking for those that are rule and reign. And I get letters like I did from Sister Belinda, you know, some years ago, and she says, well, we want to be part of the bride class. Can you please send some elders from Mongoma to baptize us? She says, you know, we're in the church, and we went to the, because we had a true seminar in their church, and then we've been studying right along, and we said, a whole group of us, we want to be baptized. And so we talked to the leader of the church, and the bishop said, I'll be glad to baptize you. And she said, well, wrote to me, how can the uncircumcised baptize the circumcised? That's her metaphor. I didn't put that in her mind. But that tells me she's getting the point. Well, the bishop didn't apparently got that metaphor, too, and didn't really like it too much. And so they had to go on their own. They had to separate and start a new group, and they never asked me for a dime. They just started meeting and started paying rent to a place to meet. And then the authorities got on them because the bishop put the authorities on them. They weren't licensed as a church. And so she and her husband spent some time in jail, got out a few weeks later, and then her husband died in a car accident. So she's left alone. Her sister's there, but she's still very much in the truth. So I asked her once, I said, well, you know, we got a lot of requests for seminars. Do you got anybody in your study group that can go out and do this? I said, we got a whole bunch of seminars for you to fill. She says, yes, we can. She gave me a list. I says, are these consecrated people? She says, yes, all of these entered the high calling when I did. You know, when we had the brethren from Mongoma come over and baptize us. So it's onward and upward. And it is having an impact. There's no question. This is part of the draw. Now, when I send speakers out, I never tell them what to talk about. I just ask them afterwards, what did you talk about? And they tell me, and they not infrequently mention the 2043 millennial kingdom, but not always. Not always. In fact, I got some reports here that are just rather intriguing. If anybody wants to take them and read them, I won't read them out loud here just now. But I always ask them to report to me, and Brother Patrick Osundra, who I've never met in my life, where is he from? Is he from that group or some other group? I forget just now. But he went out, glowing testimony. He spends 2 days, you know, 8 hours a day, truth one day, 8 hours the next day. We've been averaging about two of those meetings every day for, you know, for a couple of months now. Thousands, tens of thousands of people. And so it's having its impact. And so I think, well, maybe it's having the impact it's supposed to be having. We'll see. I don't know what the future is going to hold, whether this will peter out or whether it will just multiply. I really don't know. So I just you just go with the flow. Who am I talking to? What is, who asked this question?
Bill.
Bill? Oh yeah. Okay. No. I thought it was Paul. Yeah, I thought it was Paul. So we'll just see where it goes, you know. But as far as I can see, it's true. And the only thing that I can hear objection is that, well, we're not supposed to know.
Doesn't that sound familiar?
Oh, okay.
It's got a ring to it.
Yeah, it's got a ring.
He knows the date when Jesus comes back.
So then if that comes from brethren, I think to myself, well, didn't Brother Russell seem to think he knew? He didn't seem to have an objection. You know, he didn't say, oh, well, we can't know, you know.
He even uses that article, that argument in the second volume, that Jesus didn't say no one would ever know.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And he's right in that. So it doesn't prove that we're right. And maybe, you know, everybody thought that, you know, this is the argument that comes to me most often. I had it in Romania, you know, a private fellowship with a brother. It was on the liberal edge, you know, not a conservative edge, this particular brother I was talking to. And he says, Brother Rice, you know, we've always been disappointed. We've always been disappointed. So, you know, watch out. You know, this, I guess the lesson is you've been disappointed, therefore you will be disappointed. I guess. So I said, well, no, wait a minute. Now, I said, now you brought me here in your car. So you've got a car. He said, yeah. I said, you ever lose your keys to your car? He said, well, yeah. I said, well, you know, if you lose your keys to the car, you look over here and they're not there. And so you look over here and they're not there. And you say, oh, I know. You look over here, they're not there. So then you say, that's it. I've been disappointed 3 times. I'm not going to look anymore. That's the end of my car. Of course not. You know, you say, well, it's out there, somewhere, you know, where's the key? I mean, the key's got to be there. So you keep looking until you find it. And guess what? When you finally find it, you always find it in the very last place you look for it. Because you stop looking then. So it's by definition. That's no evidence that you can't know. By definition, if you're looking for something you're not sure of, as the light becomes more and more focused, the last place you're ever going to find is the right answer. Now, there's nothing in the scriptures that affirms to me that we would have the right answer. I guess a few years ago I remember thinking, you know, I don't think we'll ever know. And the reason I concluded that was simply, not because you couldn't, but simply because I didn't see how you could. And then suddenly I did see how you could. And now it just continues to augment. And it seems rational to me. Now we'll see. 2029, we'll see what happens. And we'll just see. That's all.
So it was the study of the 6,000 years that brought you to it.
Really, it was.
And even what year was that?
Well, you know, I first published Time of Prophecy in 1994. And when I published that, I found a way to make 6,000 years end where we thought it did end. But I acknowledged there, I said, look, I'm unclear about this point. And if this point doesn't prove true, then I would have to look squarely at the possibility that 6,000 years ending in the future. So that whole point was about how long they spent in Egypt. A long period, like 430 years, or a short period, like 215. And I found an intermediate way, but I says, but I'm not really sure that I'm right on this point. I said that in Time Prophecy. Because some people have said, told me, you know, in Time Prophecy you thought this, and now you think this. And I said, yes, but look, I told you right there where I was unclear. I'm so glad I put that in there. Not that anybody is really pacified by that, but I am. You know, I remember at the time, I got to be honest about this. I do have an uncertainty here. I express that. And if I'm wrong, then it will be in the future. And, you know, after that, for 5 years, I studied. What do I study? I had a purpose for studying this. 5 years, I studied the first 7 chapters of First Chronicles. You know what's in there? He begat, he begat, he begat, he begat. And what I was trying to find is, in all these genealogies, looking for the time that would cover the period in Egypt. Can you demonstrate from the genealogies, not the exact number of years, but whether it's a relatively long period or relatively short? And I was trying to make it be a relatively long period. And finally I realized, why can I not prove this in 5 years? It's because it's not true. And then I said, I've got to look squarely at the other option. And when I did, I realized that's the fact. And then I realized a number of these things, and I said, oh, this is it. So I know the very year. That was 2000. I know that because I put a single sheet insert preface to the Time of Prophecy. Year 2000 update. And I explained just what my situation was. And then two years later, maybe, stream of time. And that's it. And I'm still going with that. Just a lot more evidence, but I'm still going with that. Bill?
I don't know if you remember that year that you spoke in Chicago. We were there, and it was
It was a summer evening, and I remember you looking at, you know, the time prophecies or the time length of Egypt. And you thought, you said, you know, if I can just get Joseph and I can pinpoint this, I think I've got it. And then from that point on, I think you had looked at it and you said, you know, it's not what we think it is. Mm. I remember that. It was a public meeting, in fact, I think. You gave a talk at a public meeting, and I remember walking out of there with your sister and your brother-in-law, and it was a nice sunny or a nice, nice warm summer evening in Chicago, and we were walking out kind of discussing, you know, and I remember talking with you about it. But I can't, you know, it had to be prior to 2000. It had to be, you know, 98 or something like that. And,
that's,
you know,
interesting.
You had to,
I don't have a clear recollection on that point.
Yeah,
it was a public meeting.
Yeah, and I remember Carl was there. And
there was the prophecy seminar.
I did come in for a prophecy seminar. Maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. Hmm, okay. That's
I remember about my coworker to that prophecy seminar. She loved it.
Oh,
and afterwards she said, oh, he was wonderful. I completely agree with him, especially that point about the two witnesses and how they're going to be seen on the Internet and over the TV.
I see. Well, I'm glad she thought she agreed anyway.
I said, gee, I wonder where you were. I didn't hear any of that.
I guess she was just infatuated with that thought, too, and just lumped it all together. Yeah. That's interesting.
I did study with a group of friends of mine on chronology.
Do I have to talk to this? Are we recording?
All right. I just studied with a group of friends of mine on chronology, and it was one night. I mean, it's a long thing, and it was, you know, I went through all basically everything in one night. So, I mean, it was a lot to take in. You know, I left a few minor things out, but I covered all the basics. And so I have a couple of my friends that were there, Kyle and Bethany, who since moved to Florida. They've time went by, and they actually stayed with me for a couple of months when they were in transition, then they moved to Florida, and I've been down to visit them several times. And so I think it was the last time I was down there, but the time before, we got into a conversation, and whatever we were talking about, I needed that date, 2043. So I said, do you remember what date we talked about? And Bethany goes, yeah, 2043, that's when the kingdom comes.
Well, that's good.
Addition to that, we sometime before that, when they'd been staying with me, I had gone through the chronology, but I had never explained the second presence yet. You know, and I was kind of trying to feel of the right time when I felt like it would be a good time to introduce it to them. And somehow we got into the date 1874, and they were like, well, you have never explained that one date. You need to tell us what that date is, you know? And I'm like, okay, here we go. So we did a study on it kind of right on the spot, and we were about a half hour into it, and Kyle goes, because he was raised Baptist, you know, and he's kind of rebelled against it, you know, the strictness of the church and the theology and everything. And we get about halfway into it, and Kyle goes, this makes so much more sense.
Wow.
So, you know, Kyle and Bethany agree with you at least, so.
Good. I'm glad to hear. Well, if 2029 pans out, there'd be more interest in this, perhaps. But I'm sure the Lord will give everybody as much information as they need in the circumstances by whatever means. So I rest content in that.
What do you expect in
2029? 2029? Well, this is very interpretive. But you know, in Acts, the 27th chapter, that's the voyage to Rome. Those are 14 years of storm, 14 days of storm. And if those 14 days are a day for a year, back up from 2023 when the crash comes and you come to 2029. We'll see. We'll see whether, that's a 14-year marker, so we'll see whether that's going to pan out or not. Now, if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't mean 24-3 is wrong. It means our day for a year is wrong.
The
shipwreck.
Literally.
Yeah. We'll see. We walk by faith, not by sight. We still walk by faith. So.
Well, some of the brethren in Romania are waiting for 2034.
2034. Yes, I know. Well, they'll hit 2029 before they get there. And we'll see. We'll see if that's meaningful.
14 years was someplace else too. I forget where, but you mentioned.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, if you start with the earthquake in 1789, and you go to the time they expected Christ to return, was that 1843? Mm-hmm. That was 54 years. And 14 years before then, you had another marker. That was 1829. That's 14. That's 40. Now, if you bring all that to our day, 1989 is when the earthquake phase ended. 2043 is when we anticipate the end of 7,000 years. And 14 years would be 2029. That's so there's two places where it's kind of a parallel there.
Exactly
200 years, yeah. Now, why should that be exactly 200 years? What's the point of that? Well, you know, remember the 2,300 days of Daniel? Where do they start? With the 70 weeks. Where does the 70 weeks start? Right in the middle of God's plan. Doesn't that necessarily mean, if that's true, that from here to here is 2,500 years? But the 2,300 years...
Okay.
Go 200 years shy of that, see? That's why it would be 200 years. Because the prophecy says there's a span of prophecy that's 200 years shy of the kingdom. So that's basically it.
So you help us come to the conclusion.
Say again?
You're giving us more details on how helping us come to your conclusion.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah. So do you expect during this trouble that Israel will be spared?
During that 14 years?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see. I you know, when the downturn hit, everybody suffered. But Israel prospered reasonably well. A downturn of 2008. I don't really know. Everything. Everybody affects everything. Everybody affects everybody else. That's what I meant to say. So I don't really know how it's going to be in Israel, whether they'll be prospering super or not. If I had to guess, I would say they'd be probably faring about as well or better than most people. Through the possible turndown. But I don't really see a prophecy that tells me one way or the other for sure.
1789, that's the French Revolution. 1989, Russian Revolution?
1989, the breakup of the Soviet Union. Yeah. Fall of the end of the earthquake period.
Was it also the Chinese Revolution?
There's a Romanian
connection. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There is a Romanian connection, yeah. December, Ceausescu.
Stefan, when was the Chinese
thing? Tiananmen
Square.
1989.
Yeah.
1989, that's what I
said.
Tiananmen Square.
No, no. Yes.
Wasn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
everything
know.
Was 89.
Everything.
Even that. Yeah.
Hmm.
It was the year. This isn't just like a flash of the pan.
Yeah.
So I think you go back 70 years, if I remember right. 1919 was the other Chinese Revolution.
Well,
I'll tell you something I do with my friends when I talk with them
on some of these prophecies, because everybody looks at, you know, especially this downturn that we had, you know, I mean, I have friends that, you know, are well-armed and things like that at work, you know, that are concerned about these things. And I think that's the way a lot of the world thinks about some of this stuff. And I, you know, one of the kind of the witness things, I look at them a little bit and I say, when was the best years of the United States? Of course, you get a lot of different answers. But basically, my comment to them is, after World War II to 1989. And then after 1989, I say we see the dissolving of the middle class. And it's a perpetual, and I keep on telling them, it's not coming back. It's going to continue to be, you know, dissolving and diminishing. Yeah. You know, we know right after World War II, it was a large building, you know, two Chevys in every driveway. I mean, that was the whole idea. 1989 really, I think it put the end of the whole thing.
Now there's two Jeeps in I have four of my name.
June 5th, 1989 was the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Looking good. They're all boxed.
I should pull it up and
it was on April.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right there,
he's got it right there. and do it.
So, Brother David, we have time and prophecy done.
Yes.
I have to do it, you have to do it.
Stream of time is what this is all under right now?
Yes.
Okay. And so all this other, the parallels and the other things, a lot of, you know, the other things that we've discussed, what stage are you in, you know, publishing?
I haven't put pen to paper on them. All I've got is up here and in my notes, that's all. So I that's one of the things I want to get to, and Africa keeps intruding. So I don't know when I'll get to that. There's something else I could tell you, though, about progress as far as evidence in a historical sense to verify that we're on the right track. That's quite independent of all these scriptural parallels. And I just posted 2 days before I came here, I posted some conclusions about Egypt. I've shared that with some of you. Did I talk to you about that? No. Well, I'll just show you just a little bit. I'll illustrate what I've got. I'm going to erase some of this stuff, okay? But there. If you want to figure out how historians date ancient Mesopotamian history, do you know how they do it? There's one document that they use above all else to date ancient Mesopotamian history. What's that document? Anybody know? Nope. That doesn't have chronological.
You're talking about the Code of Hammurabi.
Hammurabi's era, yeah. And it's the dynasty of Hammurabi, as a matter of fact.
Is that Venus tablets?
Yes, that's it. Venus tablets. Now, I happen to have gone to the International Convention this year. And on the way home, I spent some time in London. I saw some brethren. And I also had most of the early part of a day to kill. So I went to the British Museum and I walked around. And I found the Venus Tablet of Mizudugo. Not that it did me any good, but it's just for interest's sake. You know, I mean, I can't read it, and I could better photographs on the internet that I could take. But I saw it. It was kind of nice to see it. I sat there for a while. I was very tired, sat on a bench nearby. Patron came around looking at it. I said, "Do you know what this is all about?" I said, I was looking for somebody to talk to.
Little did they know.
So he listened to me, you know. I says, "I've been studying this tablet for a year now." He says, "And I think I've got some conclusions." So he was interested. Caused him at least to take a picture of it. He thought it was noteworthy enough. So they have this Venus tablet of Amizadugo. Amizadugo was about four generations after Hammurabi. And he reigned 21 years, and nobody else did, but he did. He left a record of the motions of Venus in the sky for 21 years. You know, Venus takes about a year and a half to go through its cycle. So in 21 years, there's time for 13 cycles of Venus. What's a cycle? You know, Venus is a morning star sometimes, and you know, sometimes it's an evening star. It's never the same at both times of the year. So they recorded the time when Venus appeared as a morning star, disappeared as a morning star, reappeared as an evening star, disappeared as an evening star. There's four data points, right, in that cycle. 13 of those, 4 times 13, that's 52. So they have 52 observations of when Venus appeared and disappeared as prominent position.
21?
21 years.
Okay.
13 cycles in 21 years.
Because I pulled up the Wikipedia.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so you know, if you're a good astronomer or you have a good program that'll tell you, why can't you just figure out, this is dated according to the Babylonian calendar. There's enough data available now to reconstruct the Babylonian calendar. Okay, maybe you miss a day here, a day there, depending upon the lunar crescent, but otherwise you're pretty close. So I actually did that. I know how to do that. I wrote a little program to reconstruct the Babylonian calendar based upon the information in the books that I got. And there's a very bright man called Peter Huber, named Peter Huber, who wrote a treatise on this, a lengthy treatise, in 1982. He's got all the data there you want, and so I was able to write a program.
Astronomical dating of Babylon 1 and Ur the Third.
That's it. That's Peter Huber's work. Yeah. Boy, this is... You gotta watch what you say. Checked instantly. So I got his book and read it and got acquainted with the issue. And then I downloaded 1,000 years of the sightings of the crescent moon for between 2000 and 1000 BC. That took a while. You know, I wrote to Larry Chupak in Chicago. He's a professional astronomer. I says, "What program can I do to get 1,000 years of the daily risings and settings of Venus?" He says, "There's no program that will do that."
So I went online. I found a Skyview Cafe. Other people told me about. And you know that if you want to, sit at your computer ad infinitum, you know, doing this and moving mouses and getting a little bit of data and doing it again 5,000 million times. You know, you wear out your wrist and all that. But you can. There's a program called Hotkey where you can simulate keystrokes and mouse movements. So I got that, and you can download it free. You got to figure it out. That's a problem. But I was able to figure it out well enough so I could, you know, punch a button and have it spend 2 hours gathering maybe, you know, several hundred, you know, days of this information, or maybe 1,000 or whatever. So I would set my computer on, and then I'd punch the button and let it go, and I'd go to bed. And I'd set my alarm for 3 in the morning, get up at 3, punch it again, keep it going, you know. I did this for a couple of weeks, you know, and I got enough data. So I have 1,000 years of the daily motion, risings and settings of Venus. So I was able to reconstruct the calendar and reconstruct this and write a program to figure it all out, you know. Hope I programmed it right and there weren't any mistakes. So I'm able now to figure out in 1,000 years there are only, let's see, what was it, 600 and some possibilities for dating this tablet of Amisadugwo within 1,000 years. And so you just go through each one of these 600 and some possibilities and see which of these is the closest. And you come out to about 14 of them that are pretty close, and you don't know which one to pick. And you look back in history and you find, well, this person in 1908, Franz Kugler, he had one of those, and this person over in Germany, he had this date, and I've read a piece of literature that summarizes all this research. And so I put all these 14 together, and I did a little work on it, and I said, I think I got a solution. So I finally wrote it up, and I posted it on the Internet, and had quite a long, lengthy dialogue with a gentleman from Australia on this until he finally showed me where my mistake was. And so he's right, and so I regrouped and came another approach, and I think I got it now. And I published it again. It was only a little bit different than the first one, but it solves the problem he's talking about. And nobody has rebutted it. That's all I can say. The first time they did, and now nobody has. And I think it's correct. So let me show you what's going on here. We have the Venus tablets of Amisadugwo. We have 21 years here that I think we can uniquely date in history. I claim that we can do that. Now, like my brother-in-law Bob Whitaker says, you got to have this peer reviewed. Well, I tried, you know, and the peers have looked at it. They chopped apart the first one, but not the second one. So I haven't pressed the point, but I'm going to. But I'm pretty sure we got that. So now you say that Peter Huber worked on the third dynasty of Ur as well. And so that's about 3 centuries earlier. There's a series of 4 lunar eclipses that fit in this king and this king, this king, this king. And you see, well, let's date that pattern of lunar eclipses and figure out when that is. Well, there's different opinions about that and all kinds of, right? But it turns out that in 1990-something, a gentleman from England wrote a paper on this, and he said, look, this first eclipse has to be one of these eclipses. The second one has to be one of these 4. Well, one of these lists of the list. The third one has to be on this list. The fourth one has to be one on this list. Well, okay then. There's only one way to combine those. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of depth to figure out there's only one way to combine them. And so I did that, and I think I've got the solution. Now, a lot of other people think they had solutions, so I said, well, tell me your solution. A general from the Netherlands thought he had a solution. He said, well, tell me about it. You know, list it for me. He listed, and I said, now, what about this one? This isn't on the right month. Oh, well, look, it's close. I said, well, what about this? This is inquiry. He said, well, you got something better? the point is, he admitted, it didn't quite fit. Mine does. So you've got something here. You've got a date here. You've got a date for this. But how many years is it between the two? So I asked this gentleman in Australia that showed me a flaw in my original thinking here. The name is, what is his name? Baker, Joe Baker. And if you Google Joe Baker and, you know, ancient history or something, you probably get him. But so I said, how many years is it between Ur III and the First Dynasty of Babylon? He says, well, there's a new paper on this, a few years ago, written by a woman named Madeline Fitzgerald, a PhD research thesis of hers. And her thesis is the kings of Larsa that ruled between those two. So I looked at, he says, it's on the Internet, you can get a PDF. So I did, downloaded it, you know, looked it over. And the appendix, she has a large chart, lists every single year between them and every year of the king of Larsa and some other kings that contrast with that. She's got it all figured out. Hope she's right, because her answer exactly fits, exactly, to the T, the distance year for year between those two solutions. Exactly. I'm partial to her view because it fits. But here's the gentleman that was trying to refute me. He still doesn't agree with me. He says it's much too young. It's got to go way back. He does not agree with me. But he's the one that supplied this information. And we have there three independent testimonies that are consistent with each other that date antiquity. And David Roll, the British Egyptologist, is quite happy with this because he says that's about where I thought it was, more or less, you know.
You actually
talked
to him?
Well, I'm in a discussion group that's dedicated to his views. And so
right.
Did he comment on this? Yes, he did.
Huh.
Yes, he did. This is actually, he commented on the first solution that I had, that it was later defective, and then I corrected it. And he said, this looks good, Dave. He was quite impressed. And so he says, at that time, I'll tell you what, would you look at the lunar dates of the 12th dynasty of Egypt? He's the one that did, yeah. So I said, okay, I mean, you know, most professional historians are not astronomers, they're not computer programmers, you know, so you get somebody that is, and you say, well, okay, would you do this? Well, I'm an amateur. But they don't know that. you can do enough to make some progress. But a lot of these people are amateurs that deal with this stuff, so I'm in good company there. But the 12th dynasty of Egypt is altogether different from Mesopotamia, totally removed from that, totally independent. And it turns out there's a king named Sesostris III, another king named Amenemes III, and they followed one after the other. I'll just put an S3 there. And A3 there. Now, your Uncle Jim knows all about these guys. He has opinions about all this stuff. He's the only one I sent this paper to. I posted it to the internet, and I sent it to Brother Jim. And he thanked me for it, and he's digesting it. But there are 14, on the calendar, they have 14 dates on their Egyptian calendar. You know how Egyptian calendar works? 30 days times 12 plus 5 at the end. Very simple. And we know from Roman times how to integrate the Julian calendar with the Egyptian calendar. So you just compute backward. You can find any Egyptian date and any Julian date back of that. It's very simple. You have a program to do that. So we got 14 dates on the Egyptian calendar where they say that's the beginning of a new lunar month. So I said, well, we should be able to figure that out. I downloaded 1,000 years of, you know, daily moon risings, because that's when they looked at the moon. And then there's 26 of those in the reign of Amenemes III. So what I said was, you can determine a 500-year window that this would fit any one of 19 possibilities. And this one will fit any one of 10 possibilities. You have more eclipses, so it reduces the options, not eclipses, lunar dates. But you know, you've got to join this one with this one so they exactly butt up to each other. And that leaves only 9 possibilities. And of those 9, only one of them will allow Sesostris III to have a 19-year reign. And why do we think that's a 19-year reign? Because the last lunar date is year 18, and there's no more for the rest of his reign. The other options are 30 years or 44. That's it. He either reigned 19 or 30 or 44. Only one option will be allow him a reign of 19. And I think that's the right option. So I think that tells us how to allocate this in history. We can now pin that down. If he reigned 19 years, we know how to pin this down in history. And guess what? This whole thing is brought down about 3.5 centuries closer to us now. And this is brought down about 3.5 centuries closer to us. And so they're in tandem. They're working in the same direction. Now, I'm eager to see what David Roll says about this. I think he should think it's nice, but it doesn't exactly fit his theories, but it's pretty close. But the nice thing about this is we have a date now, if this is right, and that date says that Amenemes died in, 1448, maybe, something like that. I may be off a couple years in my memory. But he reigned for like 45 years, this guy did. Well, 1445 is the date of the Exodus. That means this man was a long-reign king that reigned like 40-something years. And you remember when Moses was in the wilderness shepherding? And God says, now everybody that sought thy life is dead now. That the Pharaoh had to be a real long-reigning Pharaoh. He's the only one in the neighborhood that's going to about match that. And so then his successor, just a short reign before he died in the Red Sea, and then his wife took over because their heir was killed in the firstborn. It all fits. I've got a book on my shelf that tells us this is about right, but they didn't have the dates down right. But the thought that the 12th dynasty is the dynasty that closed with the Exodus is not unheard of. That's a view that's out there. So I think we've got it. We'll see what the peer review says. We'll see if they could find some holes to this. I don't know if they do. They do. We'll see.
What are the dates on the Mesopotamia
one? I was trying to remember myself. but I can tell you this. What it does is verify something that your Uncle Jim said 40 years ago. He said, when you look at antiquity and you look at Genesis 14, Ur-Nammu of the third dynasty has got to be Amraphel, king of Shinar, that Abraham encountered when he slaughtered the four kings. And you have a 10-year window for that to work. So let's say here's Ur-Nammu right here. You've got a 10, Joe, I can tell you, that is dated to 1871 BC, when he died at the end of his 18th year. And I know that because you only have a 10-year window when Abraham entered the land in 1875, and 10 years later when Ishmael was conceived. So that would be 1865. You got a 10-year window, and somewhere in that 10-year window he had to encounter Ur-Nammu. These are the dates. And I remember because it was 4 years. So I said I couldn't remember the date, but now I get it. It was 4 years after Abraham entered the land. That was Ur-Nammu died. That verifies what your uncle said. Now, he had a different date for both of these. Jim did. But still, his connection, I think, is legitimate. And now I can show that Jim was right. I told him about this. And he's looking at it. You know, that's all I can say. He's looking at it. No question. I would love to have Jim say, yes, I think you're right. You know, because then the brethren can say, okay, you know, maybe there's something you're looking for. What's that? Huh? Not just me. Well, you know, because, I mean, the brethren have told me, they say, look, you know, you tell me one thing, Jim tells you another, you know, what are we supposed to do? Yeah, you got a point. I understand.
Now, the Venus calendar, is that the same as the transit of Venus?
No. No, it is not. No, the transit of Venus is different. That's when Venus goes across the face of the sun.
Right.
We did. And this is very interesting. You know when the last, you know when the most significant transit of Venus ever in the history of humankind occurred? No.
It was
1874. And I say that's the most significant because 100 years before that, you know, they knew there was a transit of Venus. The time before that, they really didn't even know. I mean, it wasn't until Johann Kepler you even knew such a thing occurred. And then they had such poor instrumentation, they tried to observe it, they failed to get any meaningful results. The best year of observation was 1874. They had enough precision and instrumentation, enough knowledge, because after that, the next time, it happened in pairs, 8 years apart, and then a century or so, yeah. So the next time it came around, they said, well, this is interesting, we already know everything we could figure out from it. The 1 year that they actually learned information was 1874. Now, you know that at the Great Pyramid, there's a three-pronged woods thing up there and a pole here that takes you to the top of what it would have been, the apex. You know who put that up there? You know when? You know why? 1874. And it was put up there by people observing the transit of Venus. Boy, does this ever make symbology. They're looking for the morning star. And you know, the morning star is the return of Christ. The sun is the kingdom, but the morning star is the return of Christ. Remember what Peter says? He says, until the day star, attend to the word of prophecy, until the day star, morning star, arise in your hearts, until the Lord returns. But the brilliance of the sunrise, that's later. So 1874, the wise, according to the prophecies, you know, symbolically, are looking for the day star, and they receive him in 1874. And they do more than that. The Great Pyramid, they plot out the dimensions of the four corners of it and, you know, figure it all out, you know. That's like 1874 onward, we're mapping out the whole divine plan of the ages and understanding what's going on. We've seen the invisible top stone is there from 1874. I kind of like that. You know, I honestly have, you know, little reservations about the Great Pyramid, but this is kind of evidence that makes me enthused about it.
So what did they put that metal thing up there for to do the transit?
I don't really understand the technicalities of it, okay. but I just know that's the purpose. Adam Rutherford has a footnote in his books that explains this.
But I never made the connection there when they were looking at the transit of Venus.
Yeah.
With that thing somehow. They must have had some instruments or something hung on it or something.
Huh? Must have, or maybe a point of observation. You know, I really don't know.
Carl didn't stay in his time. Carl used to mention it.
Yeah, yeah. And
so what's the significance of this year with the transit of Venus? Any significance?
Not that I know of. I was interested to watch it.
But I watched it on the computer, you know, broadcast from the Mount Hawaii, Mount Kilauea or whatever it is.
15 states in the United States.
But I don't. But I don't know if there's any symbolic meaning today. Yes.
I'm trying to remember what my Uncle Jim had said about that Erna Amude.
Yeah.
But one of the significances in it was that there had to be a period of time in which he came, went back to his own land, and then came back again.
Yeah.
And the records, there was only one that fit, and that's the right time period.
That's right. That's right. He had something substantial. Now, if you look in Genesis 14, you'll see that it says that Ornamu came, and he subdued, and then it says they served him for 12 years. And the 13th year, they rebelled. And the 14th year, he came back again. And that's when he's going to be vanquished by Abraham. So the first time he came was 14 years before he died. He reigned for 18 years, so he came the first time in the fourth year of his reign. And there's a record, apparently, from the fourth year of his reign that says he made straight the road from lower to upper, you know, which means the Mediterranean Sea, Persian Sea to the Mediterranean. So he came west in his fourth year and conquered. He died 14 years later. So this fits, you know, the interval. So it's not proof, but it's good evidence. So I think that we're, you know, all the spiritual, scriptural stuff is one thing. But now it looks like to me, as far as I can see, we're on the verge of breaking this open even historically and really showing that this is very consistent with the scriptural Hebrew data and that we've got some really positive historical evidence now. But we'll see what the experts say about it. Yeah.
So that would show that the Septuagint chronology is not only off, but way off.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would. You are all very patient people. Thank you. I think I'll sit down now.